Happy Holiday Monday. Welcome to Jays Talk Plus. Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz with you. Busy weekend of sports in Toronto. Busy weekend of baseball. Busy weekend of not baseball. Busy life weekend on my end. You were just stuck at the ballpark all... stuck. It was a fun series.
Stuck.
How you doing?
Stuck is the right word. Listen, I also separate my sports between baseball and non-baseball. So I feel very seen and represented. Happy Victoria Day. That's what it is, right? Victoria Day?
I don't know.
Okay. So happy not holiday.
I just someone had to remind me this week. So the Jays were wearing, every team was wearing kind of the camo hats. And so in my head, I'm like, well, we have a holiday Monday. So it must also be Memorial Day in the US. And that's why they're wearing the camo hats. But it is Memorial Day in the US next week.
Oh, is it?
And this was just like Armed Forces weekend, which is different from Memorial Day or Veterans Day. And I'm not exactly sure what the difference between those things is, but the Jays camo hats look better than I would have. I don't love the camo aesthetic for like baseball hats.
Yep.
It looked better than I thought it would. The Padres had mismatched camo. Like the camo hat didn't match their camo alternate jersey.
Really?
Yeah, it was an aesthetic mess.
Yeah, I didn't really like it with the City Connect on Friday. I think that looked
off. Looked better than those night mode hats.
Okay, let's not go that far. I honestly don't think it looked better than the City Connect hat or than the night mode hat. But aesthetic choices aside, it was a fun series. There wasn't, you can find positives for sure. It was still a losing weekend for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, I have a few items to check off before we get into the Tiger series, which the Blue Jays lost 2 out of 3. Related to holidays and Holiday Monday, absolute nonsense to me that the Blue Jays aren't playing today.
Yeah. It's weird, right? Because first of all, I think I remember years ago when Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was coming up and the Blue Jays sat him on Victoria Day. That was a big deal. Mm-hmm. So it's not like, and I wanted to ask you actually, because, you know, remember, I didn't grow up here. I kind of came in 2018. And it's been sort of a mess since then. So I don't know necessarily if this is normal or not.
It is not something that they are on top of. So there have been, you know, the August long weekend, they're off for a day. There's been this one, they were off for a day. It's only in the last 8 or 9 years that they've been locked in for a home game on Canada Day.
Oh,
that
really?
It used to be the one that would drive me most nuts. It's Canada Day, Canada's only baseball team, and they're on the road half the time. It used to frustrate me so much, and then they'd be at home on July 4th. You can't make the schedule perfect, but the Padres are off today as well. It is a holiday. It's if you're talking about maximizing ticket sales, a holiday Monday in the city, now that the weather is nice enough for the dome to be open a little bit, at least when it's not as windy as yesterday. Silly that there's not a game today.
But then again, everyone is kind of still, I guess, hungover from the Maple Leafs loss
yesterday.
Yeah,
but you don't know that when you make the Major League Baseball schedule.
You don't. I feel like it worked out for the best, though. I don't know how many sports fans would be, you know, obviously this, it would be a good crowd. Don't get me wrong. But so the vibes would have been a little iffy.
I would argue that this week is now, because the Leafs got eliminated last night, the most important week of the Leaf season in terms of generating excitement and generating interest because
of the Blue Jays season?
Yes.
Okay.
So obviously there are some people who are just baseball fans and people have been locked in on the Blue Jays already. There's some people who are just hockey fans and don't care about baseball in the summer. I would imagine there is a chunk of fan who are fans of both.
Yep.
And the Leafs being in the second round of the playoffs carried a bunch of mental space and fandom
100%.
Space. And maybe you still go to, you know, a Jays game or whatever, but I've been to a few lately where people have it up on their phones. Or Friday, I went to the game pregame. And then I got out of there so I could double screen it and have, you know, Leafs and Jays both going on. So I would think this is a pretty high leverage week for the Blue Jays. You've got a bunch of people who can now shut the page on the Toronto Maple Leafs season. Perhaps this Toronto Maple Leafs era. We'll see. Good time to get hot. Good time to sweep the Padres, sweep the Rays, keep it rolling here. Two other notes. I have a bunch of stuff before we get into that. Yesterday's game. I listened to a good chunk of it on the radio, and then I watched some of it on my phone. And so the reason I did this was I was at the IBL Leafs game. I watched our pal Ayami Sato pitch.
More heartbreak there.
Did not go particularly well. She allowed 4 homers and 7 runs in 2 innings. The team came all the way back, and then lost 16-15 in 10 innings.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. A lot of offense in that one. But one thing it really made me appreciate, so it was a nice day yesterday. It wasn't super hot, but it was nice. So it just, the whole day made me very appreciative of the, I'll say, portability of baseball, where it's obviously more so than basketball or hockey or other sports, it's a radio sport. You can understand the game. You can appreciate the game on radio. Maybe that's, you know, the built-in history of it or whatever. But I find to this day still, it's, you know, it's easier to consume the sport on radio than it is basketball or hockey. So I've always appreciated that. And, you know, you go to the park with some friends and you have it on the radio or something like that. Now we're spoiled in the ability that I could just like fire up the Sportsnet Plus app and like also watch the once it hit high leverage time. And I'm like, okay, IBL Leafs, you guys chill for a second. That game, by the way, the Leafs game took 4.5 hours.
Really?
The IBL Leafs game. I did not make it to the end because there was a game 7 in the NBA and a game 7 in the NHL.
And that hill is too steep for 4.5 hours.
Yeah, your butt gets numb pretty quick.
What was I going to say about that?
I was just appreciating the portability of baseball. And like, that's the Jays lost and the Leafs lost, but there's nothing I like quite as much as you can go to the park and there's real baseball there and there's baseball in your ear or, you know, ambient baseball on a summer afternoon. I love days like that.
Listen, that I can relate to because it is, you know, soccer is huge in Brazil. We listen to it on the radio a lot. It's completely different the way it's called on the radio. It's so much more fast-paced, which makes it a lot of fun. And something that my siblings and I would do quite often is we'd go to games and we would have the radio broadcast in our headphones. And so we'd be watching the game live and listening to the radio broadcast. And it does make, say, for an elevated experience, much more fun experience, that's for sure. So yeah, I love radio, man. And I'm not just saying it because we're on radio right now.
We're also on TV, so we could just say we also love TV or the Sportsnet Plus app or anything like that. We could chill however we want to chill. Final note on siblings. There's no way he's listening to this because he's 4 years old, but it's my nephew's birthday, so happy birthday to Nolan.
Happy birthday, Nolan. We hope you're listening.
He's not. There's no way he's listening. It's a holiday Monday. They have a 4-year-old and a 1.5-year-old. There's no way they've got the radio on or Sportsnet Plus or Sportsnet 360. It's probably Bluey or Adventures of Spider-Man or something like that. Okay. Now I'm ready for Blue Jays baseball talk.
Okay. So let's have that talk then.
Whole lot of close games.
Listen, so many close games. And each of them, I will say, it did look like the Blue Jays had a real legitimate chance to come back and beat the Tigers. They only did it on Saturday, of course, with Ernie Clement coming up with the big hit in the ninth. But starting on Friday, a little bit of, again, struggles by Bowden Francis, right? Which is something that we are getting a little bit accustomed to at this point. Again, I thought that game could have gone south even sooner than it did. Yeah. He got away with some middle locations there that didn't necessarily bring results to the Tigers.
And he didn't get away with a couple. The two home runs he gave up were both, you know, a curveball and a splitter that... The curveball, whatever, reach out there and get it. But the splitter that just kind of sat middle, we've talked a lot about, you know, trying to rediscover the depth on that splitter. And that pitch was a great example of it.
And the Blue Jays are clawing back, right? Blake, we are seeing that a little bit more in the sense that the power is coming back. And there's several guys in that clubhouse that are saying, listen, we're never out of it. We always feel like we have a chance. It doesn't really matter if it's 3 or 4 runs, but... you look at the numbers with the runners in scoring position in that Friday game. That tells a little bit of a different story there, right?
Yeah, 1-for-7 with runners left on scoring position. 1-for-7 with runners in scoring position, left 5 on base. The Tigers actually had a really rough night. You talk about Bowden Francis getting away with some stuff. They stranded 9 runners in that game as well. But yeah, the Blue Jays, and look, they didn't do much of anything offensively Saturday and Sunday, despite winning Saturday's game. But, you know, even something as simple as Bo Bichette has found a little bit of a home run stroke again here, and he comes up with the big one in the eighth to keep it a close game. Chad Green gives it back with the home run to Javi Baez. But nice to see a little bit of that. And then, yeah, really Saturday, Sunday, the reason those games were so close is, you know, it's kind of the inverse where the pitching just really did its job. Yeah. And to get – it's a good thing you won Saturday's game, because how awful that weekend series would feel if you squandered that good a bullpen day.
Yes. It was really, really, really impressive. And you have, you know, Eric Lauer – Eric Lauer was really good. Mm-hmm. I know that he allowed a homer pretty early on, but no one is going to get upset about that with the way that he was pitching. And listen, I was chasing something else. I couldn't join that scrum on Saturday, but it seemed like he was very adamant about this was the game plan, and it was one time through the order, and then we were going to give it back to the pen. Yariel Rodriguez, I know we've spoken about him a little bit, but two scoreless innings, completely in control. And listen, a lot has gone wrong or just half right for this pitching staff lately. I felt like they really needed a bounce back, something to go right for them. And everything went right on that Saturday. And then the Blue Jays find the bit of offense that they needed. I want to start with Alejandro Kirk. That RBI single in the bottom of the eighth, that was one of the best at-bats we've seen from him this season. What did you see? I think it was a nine-pitch at-bat there that ended in an RBI single.
Yeah, not only a nine-pitch at-bat, but you come in to that game as a pinch hitter. So you don't have the benefit of, this is how the Tigers have been attacking me. You know, this is what I saw earlier. You played on Friday, so you're not coming in completely cold, but that's a tough spot to be in. And Alejandro Kirk does have some experience as a pinch hitter because, you know, he split time with Danny Jansen. He would see time at DH and things like that. But that's a really tough spot to come into. And the game plan was pretty clearly from, it was Will Vest that
yes,
was in at that
right.
point.
Yep.
See my vest. Yes. They were panning him low and in. They didn't seem to want to give him, and it was a lot of sinkers, and Will Vest is going to do that generally. But we've seen teams a couple of times this year. The Astros were the best example of it, and that's with pitchers who were throwing a little harder than Vest's 97. But there is a bet from opposing teams that Alejandro Kirk is not going to be able to get around on elite velocity. Mm-hmm. And we've seen him start to change his approach a little bit to go the other way with it if it's on the outer third of the plate. He's had a couple of big hits recently where you can remember him just poking it into right field. And this one was actually one he had to fight it off up and in to take it to right field. So not quite as conventional. They're pounding me away. I'm going to reach out and just poke it. But again, you get 97, 98. Up and in at the hands. That's a hard pitch for Alejandro Kirk to get around on historically. It's not something he does a ton of damage on, and that's why we see him get pitched that way at times. So really good. Fought off a couple of fouls on pitches that, you look at where they landed in the game cast or whatever, and they look middle, but that's a sinker that's getting a lot of arm side run on it, and you're trying to defend a little bit. So, yeah, really, really impressive to fight a couple off, and then to be able to take that one the other way is good piece of hitting.
And then obviously Dalton Varsho comes back bottom ninth, hits the double to put himself in scoring position, and I think he advances to third before Ernie comes up to bat.
Yeah, Springer grounded out.
There you go. And Ernie comes in. He was so honest after the game and saying, I have failed in that situation so many times.
He failed on Friday.
He had a chance to tie the game up. He couldn't. Comes up again, and listen, he actually started the rally when you think about it, because he took a walk in that bottom eighth and then came around to score on Kirk's RBI single. And then he takes it. It's a sinker. It's low, but it's in the zone. He does what he does best there, which is make contact. That is where Ernie Clement shines. It's making contact, and he did so on Saturday.
Yeah, and there were a couple interesting choices from Brendan Hanafy and the Tigers. and the Tigers are such a tough team to figure out. Like, I'd imagine doing a radio show about them is fascinating because they don't have a closer. They don't have an eighth inning guy. It's not get through six with a starter, have someone bridge it to the eighth, and then you've got Jimmy Garcia and Jeff Hoffman. Like, our analysis of John Schneider's bullpen usage, once you get to the eighth, the ninth, is really straightforward. You can include Brendan Little in there at this point, too.
Yep.
But it's like, okay, if it's lefty heavy, there's Little. If it's righty heavy, there's Garcia. And then you've got Jeff Hoffman for the ninth. This is, I don't know, pick your guy. Will Vest, Brendan Hanafy, Tyler Holton, but Tyler Holton might be starting today, or he might be the bulk follower or whatever.
Tommy Canley. We saw Tommy Canley a couple of times.
Yeah, who I think he gave up the Bo Bichette home run on Friday.
I believe you're right.
Interesting decisions here. You go to Hanafy, whatever. That's how they use their bullpen. You intentionally walk Anthony Santander, who did not play Friday because he's been struggling and dealing with a hip and shoulder thing. And we're going to talk about Anthony Santander out of Sunday's game because he wrote a great thing at BlueJays.com about it. But you intentionally walk Anthony Santander, who didn't play Friday, who's been struggling a lot, who came in as a pinch hitter cold. Interesting spot to intentionally walk him. And I get it. You look at the big sample. Yeah. Of course you'd rather face Ernie Clement than Anthony Santander based on what we know from these guys. So that was interesting, I thought. And then we talked about Ernie. We talked about a lot with Ernie Clement how opposing teams just don't want to give him a fastball. He had that big hit off of a cutter last week. And the cut, you know, a cutter move is closer to a breaking ball than a four-seam fastball movement profile-wise. But this one, he just comes up there and he gets two straight fastballs right over the middle of the plate.
The first one was right over the middle.
The first one was a batting, like 97, sure. And I know Hanafy's got some movement to the sinker, but that was like as middle as a 0-0 pitch gets. So interesting decision then to walk Santander and then attack Ernie Clement with what he's good at.
It was. And again, he was honest about that postgame in which he said, I got that fastball middle and let it go by me. I was not going to miss a second one. He was ready for it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it showed. It could have been such a triumphant sort of, you know, comeback, take the series, start building on something back to 500. There were so many narrative points that were just waiting to be attacked on Sunday. They couldn't come up with it. They couldn't do it.
I have one more note on Saturday. Oh, sorry. Just the Santander pinch hit comes about because they sacrificed the DH in that shuffle. And it's so fascinating. You watch how this whole game plays out. If they lose that game, there's a lot we could nitpick, right? You mentioned that Eric Lauer not going a second time through the order. That was the game plan. I talked about a little on Friday how maybe you start Lauer because the Tigers don't start their A lineup against a lefty. You get a lot of those platoon guys in. And then if you take them out once through the order, you dare A.J. Hinch to make a fourth inning substitution or a fifth inning substitution, similar to, you know, this obviously famously failed. But when you take Barrios out for Kikuchi against the Twins, who were very platoon heavy, part of it is you're daring them to take better players out of the game early and things like that. So you could have picked at that.
I feel like fans have been through enough.
Yeah. Should I not bring up that game?
Sunday, you don't remember what happened last night?
Should I not bring that up? bad playoff games are on my mind. But yeah, you would have been nitpicking too at losing 100%. The DH. Losing the DH to pinch hit Miles Straw for Addison Barger. Yes, against a lefty, but Barger, who has been hitting much better. Miles Straw, who is, you know, historically not a big hitter, even with the platoon advantage. So yeah, you could have done some nitpicking there. But you get through it. And then Sunday, the story is pretty obvious. Sunday, they go 2-for-12 with runners in scoring position. They strand 9 base runners. They threaten in the 5th, 7th, 8th, and 9th and don't manage to get enough across do anything.
We kind of need to add the first inning there, too. Akil Baddoo came up with 2 catches that were impressive, but there was also the point of, again, base running mistakes, miscues. Something along those lines for the Blue Jays. Maybe it is unfair to Bo Bichette to call it a mistake with the way that it happened for the doubling up there for outs number 2 and 3. But
yeah, it's like I just brought it up, and sorry, I know people are listening and can't necessarily see it, but Baddoo just kind of like fell down to make the catch. Yeah. It's I understand why Bo Bichette would have been halfway and thought that dropped because Baddoo kind of loses his footing. But still, it's not the first time that we've seen this team make a base running mistake.
You need to just wait a little bit longer to make sure. And with the way the Blue Jays were swinging the bats, it could have been such a different story. You know, you bring in one more hitter in that situation, runners on first and second, with Jackson Jobe really not, pitching to the best of his ability in that first inning. And then he settled, right? That's been the story a little bit. The Blue Jays lose those opportunities or miss out on those opportunities early on, and then the starting pitcher settles and they can't get much at all going on after that. And Bo Bichette has had a leadoff hit for 4 straight games now.
It was a good weekend.
3 singles and a double. The Blue Jays failed to score in the first inning each of those times.
Great.
So that really does tell you where this offense is right now and just the ability of starting pitchers to settle in.
So the times that they threatened in, yes, the first, and Kirk, that double play, so it ends at the fourth batter. Anthony Santander, who was back in the lineup Sunday, got dropped to 5th, did not come up in that situation, but I mentioned they threatened in the 5th, the 7th, the 8th, and the 9th. So Anthony Santander went from not in the lineup Friday for a mental/hip/shoulder day, not in the lineup Saturday other than a pinch hitter, comes in Sunday, and he's hitting 5th in the order. He strikes out 3 times and pops out in the infield. the strikeout with two on in the fourth, a strikeout with one on in the eighth. I know you spoke to him after the game and wrote for BlueJays.com about kind of what he's going through and how his teammates are trying to pick him up and, you know, keep the faith in him, try to get his confidence high. What were those conversations like? What did that reveal? And how valuable is it to be able to speak Spanish when everyone else is asking through a translator in the clubhouse?
Yeah. John Schneider, I forget which day it was of the weekend. The weekend tends to be a blur when we get to Monday and I'm there all weekend. But said something along the lines of, Tony is an open book. He's always been an open book. That is the impression that you get when you talk to him. He's obviously going to be careful with his words and, you know, just, I guess, express that positivity. It doesn't seem disingenuous. It seems like that's actually where he is. Known as a pro's pro, right? The guy who understands that these moments come and go. And if you're dealing with physical stuff, there is some frustration there. And you can hear it if you talk to him. There is frustration for sure. And at the same time, something that he said more than once as I talked to him was, I haven't thrown in the towel yet. And that is a sentiment that I believe he shares with a lot of people in that clubhouse. It hasn't gone the Blue Jays' way. It has been a lot of one step forward, two steps back, not only for Santander, but also for this team as a whole. We've seen so many times the Blue Jays get to 500 and then not be able to get over the hump and start building a winning streak and a winning record. That has also been a little bit the case with Santander. We have seen the flashes. We have seen just how pretty that left-handed swing is. He just missed out on a couple of good ones on Sunday that he could have, you know, drilled.
Hard hit fouls. Really.
Yes, there's a lot of that. So he's struggling with his timing. He is working on some things mechanically. We know that he's a slow starter and he needs to be in there and build a rhythm. That has not happened yet. When it started to happen, he hit his shoulder. And so obviously there's frustration in that. But as Vladimir Guerrero Jr. from the locker next to Santander's so aptly put it in Spanish, God squeezes, but he doesn't choke, which means obviously no one is out of it. Things can get tough. It doesn't mean that you're dead in the water. Basically, that's what it means.
God squeezes, but he doesn't choke.
That's incredible saying.
Yeah, that is
very,
a great,
very Latin saying.
Yeah, that's awesome. I will say, that's great to hear. Obviously, you don't want a guy throwing in a towel. You don't want a guy, you know, looking down at his hands like, what the hell do I got to do? This is now, like, Anthony Santander, known slow starter. Yep. This is now the worst stretch of his entire career.
Yeah.
So he's appeared in 41 games. I went back and I pulled every 40-game stretch of his career, including 2021 when he just didn't have a very good season in general. Last year when he, like, really got off to a cold start. This is, by a safe margin, the worst 40-game stretch of his career. He's got a 572 OPS. He's struck out 44 times in those 41 appearances. Most strikeouts he's had in a 40-game stretch since 2019 when he was first kind of not first establishing himself because there's a Rule 5 guy who had to stick around the roster and stuff like that. But since he was a full-time, like, everyday player, so it's a rough spot. He, last year he started the season with a 653 OPS over the first 40 games and then ended up in a pretty good spot where what he finished with 814 and obviously got the contract he got in the offseason. So it's possible, but this is almost 100 points of OPS lower, and it's more strikeouts. 2021, he had some stretches, you know, rough, not quite this bad, but pretty bad. But he also finished 2021. By the time he heated up, it was a little too late. He finished with a 720 OPS. It's tough, and I'd imagine it's tough when you are dealing with the mental part of a slump. And then also a wonky shoulder. And now we hear the hip is also a little banged up.
Something weird is how he described it.
The hip?
The hip. In the last swing of the Tampa Bay series, felt something weird, and he's still dealing with it. He's trying to be smart about it. He said, listen, today or Monday is an off day. I'm going to be here early. I'm going to get treatment. I'm going to come up early again on Tuesday, and we'll see where we are at that point. New team. This is a guy who spent a long, long time in Baltimore. I'm sure he's still adapting to a new way of getting around and doing things. New teammates. All of that does play a factor. I don't think that it's the be-all, end-all, but absolutely it does play a factor in early season performance. And then, again, he played really, really well, and he hit really, really well in Anaheim. It did seem like that was the, okay, here is May Santander starting to show up, hurts the shoulder. And then comes back against Tampa Bay, doesn't produce, hurts the hip. It's got to be tough to build any sort of rhythm. John Schneider said multiple times this weekend, Santander is a feel hitter. He needs to be in there every day and sort of in a way to get his rhythm and get that timing right and turn those hard hit foul balls into doubles or home runs. And I think that's why the Blue Jays are so adamant about their trust in that it is going to come back, because yeah, you probably just need to see Santander get an extended stretch of at-bats, of healthy at-bats, that is, because he's still dealing with soreness. And then you will be a little bit more able to, I don't like to use the word judge here, but yeah, judge his season maybe a little bit more fairly than what we have seen up to this point. There's just a lot going on. And so, yeah, obviously I am worried. The Blue Jays do need more from a guy like Santander, but it's not the end of the world. Let's put it like that, that this is the worst stretch of his career.
Yeah, I'm not like concerned of like, oh, the contract's terrible, he's never going to be good again. I do think it is fair to just call it the worst stretch of 100%. His career, though. Almost worth one run below replacement level so far, because he's obviously not, you know, even when he's in the outfield, he's okay. He's not, offering some value there. Worth monitoring. Also worth monitoring that he was sitting fifth in the lineup the other day. They have some tough decisions to make because they like using him to split up righties because he is a switch hitter who has that pop from the left side. Varsho was in the three spot instead. We've seen Barger up in the three spot, which I don't think they want to do a ton of. Kirk in the four spot. There's no great option. I think you are comfortable with one and two the way Bo's hitting. Yeah. At this point, but after that, a lot of question marks. So worth monitoring there. And like you said, an off day today. So maybe a mental off day as much as a physical off day as well, as he continues to work through that. Jays lose.
Oh, okay.
What'd you say? Sorry.
I thought it was break time.
It was. I was just going to
proactive
yeah,
here.
Yeah, I was just going to set it up. So Jays lose that series, rivalry series, as it were. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll go around rivalry weekend in Major League Baseball. The Yankees and Mets delivered on their part of rivalry weekend. Everything else kind of left a little bit, I don't know. We got to get a little more juice behind some of these rivalries. Agreed. If we're going to make rivalry weekend a thing. Let's take a break. Let's talk to Jordan Schusterman of Yahoo Sports on the other side about it. We'll go all around baseball, including the Baltimore Orioles firing their manager on Saturday. All that's next as Jays Talk Plus continues with Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz with you. Jays lose 2-3 to the Tigers on rivalry weekend. Yankees and Mets, they carried their share of rivalry weekend. Cubs and White Sox, less so. That was like me beating up my little brother or something like that. It was 26-8 over a three-game span. Let's talk about it. Let's talk to Jordan Schusterman of Yahoo Sports, of the BarbieCast. What's up, man? Great hat. First of all, how you doing?
I am doing great. Thanks so much for having me on.
No problem. Is that the s'mores hat? Is that what we're looking at there?
This is the Rocky Mountain Vibes, one of the minor league affiliates that is no longer an affiliate, but I believe they still exist in some form. But yes, that is Toasty the Vibe. I decided to just bring the good vibes this morning.
Wow. Hell yeah.
Thank you for that.
Toasty the Vibe. Yeah, they're in the Pioneer League now. So yes, an MLB partner league, but not an affiliated minor league.
It's just not the same. It's just not the same.
Do you think they had rivalry weekend or no?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't. It's a really good question.
I love the concept of minor league rivalries, something that we've often, I mean, we love minor league baseball, who doesn't? But because minor league baseball is, you know, not about necessarily winning, it is funny to think about like geographic intense hatred between minor league teams is a very funny idea.
Yeah, like do the Buffalo Bisons just hate Syracuse because Syracuse used to be the Jays AAA affiliate and now it's Buffalo and there's just a bitterness of having changed teams? I don't know how all that would work.
I can see it.
Yeah. Hey, but you know, honestly, some of these minor league teams have been in the same league longer than some of the rivalries that we saw this weekend, right? Who are most of which are not in the same league. And so maybe there actually is more history there. And that's probably part of why this weekend was maybe a little underwhelming.
Yeah.
Yes. That is exactly where I wanted to start. In Toronto, Blue Jays, Tigers, everyone seemed a little confused, Jordan, by that matchup, including the managers, which was pretty funny. But
everyone under like 55 was confused.
Yes. And everyone over 55 was very excited to talk about the 80s.
Like,
which Buck was also
Martinez played in those rivalry series.
Yeah, listen, you know, there's history there. It's just not where we are. But, you know, I guess what were your overall impressions of, one, the idea, and two, the execution of something like a rivalry weekend?
Yeah, so I don't think we need to overthink it too much. Like, I think that now that interleague is a regular part of our Major League Baseball watching, of course, it's existed since 1997, but in the last few years, it has become extremely common. Like, having Cubs, White Sox, like, there are some of these that are, even if you are stretching to the degree to which there is, like, deep-rooted history and hatred between the two sides, like, yes, that part is a little goofy, but I think these are still, across the board, mostly more compelling interleague matchups than the average. But at the same time, you can't just totally make it up as you go. You can't manufacture history that doesn't exist. And so while I think that this is just a way for teams in certain places to maybe sell a few more tickets on the weekend than they would have previously, when a lot of these series were happening over two games during the week, trying to pretend like it's some big thing when it's just beginning is kind of silly.
Yeah, and we got some of them. Like, you get Phillies Pirates, so you get the P-O-O-P on the scoreboard at least. You know, there are some real ones there, even if they're just geographic or whatever. I guess the next thing that the league maybe has to look into is, like, how do you – the teams that don't have natural rivals – how do you, like, entice a rivalry there? Do you slip the umpires a little something before the series and be like, we need Jays Tigers to be on fire next year. Let this thing get out of hand. Be tossing guys left and right. Lock them in a cage for a game instead of a ballpark. I don't know. There's got to be a way to juice this a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. Although the other reality is that even the biggest rivalries aren't, like, baseball just isn't really like that anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have as much bad blood between teams, even the ones that we do consider real rivals, whether it is Red Sox, Yankees, we've had this discourse when we're talking about the ones that people do know, whether it's Red Sox, Yankees, whether it's Cardinals, Cubs. And so you kind of just have to let the season play out. That's the other part of it, is oftentimes you're not going to get beef that early in the season under almost any circumstance. And usually in the past, this is another thing that we're probably going to lose to some degree with the balanced schedule. You know, you played your divisional team, or you played your in-division rivals 19 times. By the end of that, like, you're facing them, that, like, you probably by then are getting sick of them, depending on how the series is going. Now you only play them 13 times and it's so spread out, and you're having all these interleague games with teams that you haven't necessarily seen as often. And so naturally it's just going to be much harder to come up with those, that bad blood. So, I mean, as for suggestions to change that, I'm not really sure, but that's, I think, how we kind of got here.
The other thing is sometimes things just happen on their own. So if I think of, say, Brandon Hyde, wherever he lands next, he's going to have a natural rivalry with the Washington Nationals, who ran him out of Baltimore. Brandon Hyde was let go as manager of the Orioles on Saturday, coming off a loss on Friday. And then the Orioles, of course, continue to get swept by the Nationals. Shocker, Brandon Hyde might not be the entire problem with the Baltimore Orioles. Jordan, you wrote about this for Yahoo Sports. I don't know, where are you at on the Brandon Hyde thing specifically, and just this idea that, like, you could be the toast of Major League Baseball at the end of 2023 and manager of the year, and then 18 months later, you're the scapegoat for the team not getting out of first gear.
The s'more of Major League Baseball.
The s'more. Yeah. There you go.
They're getting toasted left and right. yeah, I got to say, this is just yet another – there's a lot of different directions you can go with just the Hyde conversation and the Orioles in general. But, I mean, here we are again, and this has happened in other sports where it's just like, what do we know about managers? What does any of this mean? How many coaches of the year get fired, you know, a year after they win this award? How many managers that we think are the all the difference? What happens last year? Oh, Craig Counsell leaves Milwaukee and goes to the Cubs for the biggest managerial contract ever. And then what happens? The Brewers just still win the division anyway, and the Cubs kind of stink. And then now this year, oh, well, Craig Counsell's still there and Pat Murphy's still there. And now the Cubs are good and the Brewers are good. And you know why? As we bring it back to Brandon Hyde, because some teams have more good baseball players than other teams. And most of the time, that is going to make the biggest difference. Now, I think in the case of Hyde, there are a few other things to consider because they have gone so far backwards, right? And I think that there's real reasons to criticize the front office as to where this roster ended up, particularly on the pitching side. But I also think that it's possible that Hyde's time kind of ran out. I mean, we've seen versions of that recently too with some of, I know the other managerial firings we got earlier this month with Derek Shelton and Bud Black were just like, their teams are terrible and they've been there for too long and they've never won anything. And so it's like, all right, time to go. With Baltimore, you felt like that was an organization trending in the right direction for how they showed in the postseason specifically over the last couple of years. And then for how bad it's been this year, it's possible Hyde's tenure just kind of ran out, like literally like his whatever was working just wasn't working anymore. I think that's a natural progression for any team. It's unfortunate because, as you rightly point out, it's definitely not his fault, but that is kind of how this business works. And the players all said it already. They're like, yeah, we sucked. And so this is what we get in some cases, even if a lot of them care a lot about Brandon Hyde because he has been there through so much of this.
Jordan, you mentioned Colorado, you mentioned Pittsburgh, Texas Rangers also made a hitting coach change before Memorial Day, which is the date that sort of Blake circles on his calendar as the time we usually start to see.
To be clear, I need to amend it. So today is Victoria Day in Canada. It is a holiday here. So I'm amending it to Victoria Day is when I will start making final declarations.
Oh, okay.
I feel ready enough. The 40-game mark, it's a quarter of the season. I can't wait until next week when you guys have a holiday. I need to do it today.
It just seems like there's been a lot of these early season changes. Blake is pointing out that we may be entering NBA, NHL territory. Where do you sort of stand with the amount of changes that we've seen early on here?
Yeah, I think it's a little different in this case just because the three managers involved here had been there for a while, especially Colorado. But, you know, Pittsburgh, too. I mean, it's actually an interesting contrast between Shelton and Hyde, right? Because those are two guys kind of brought in at the bottom. And you're thinking, all right, they can maybe see through this rebuild and then maybe we bring in a guy that is more used to, you know, managing a winning ball club. Hyde got to do both. Hyde managed to lost 100 games in 21 and wins 100 games 2 years later. You don't usually see that for managers to see through the rebuild, whereas Shelton just kind of stayed in fourth and fifth place the whole time, and then that was it. So is this some sort of sign that major league teams are now quicker to pull the trigger? I don't think so. I think that this run has probably slowed down here. I think that looking around the league, it's a little bit harder to see any of the other ones that would make a lot of sense, because if we're just sticking with the worst teams in the league as a theme, the Marlins and White Sox just hired new managers and they understand that they were going to be bad, and they're going to continue to kind of build that infrastructure around Clayton McCullough, around Will Venable. So if you're just looking at the bottom of the standings, or you're looking at teams that have been disappointing, I mean, there are certainly some other teams that have been disappointing, but none to the degree of Baltimore or nearly as bad, of course, as Colorado or Pittsburgh.
Yeah. So the NHL is still the high water mark for shortest average coach tenure among active coaches right now. And then we can't put MLB in the NBA conversation until two coaches get fired within like 3 weeks of the playoffs, like happened in the NBA this year. If a playoff bound team axes their manager with two games left in the season, then we can talk. Okay, so this is some negatives from the weekend. Let's turn to some fun stuff. Philadelphia Phillies had one not so fun thing. Jose Alvarado suspended for 80 games. However, it allows us to highlight a big positive in baseball the last couple weeks. Old friend Jordan Romano. Jordan, is he so back?
I'm so glad you mentioned this, because I tweeted yesterday when the Alvarado news news came out, like, hey, it's good that Romano looks better because this sucks for the Phillies bullpen and for the Phillies. And everyone's like, nah, he still stinks. Like, there's no way. This is not a good thing, whatever. And I'm like, listen. And then thankfully, he goes ahead and backs me up on Sunday looking, again, Pirates are bad. We know the Pirates are very bad. It's a very bad offense. It's not like he carved through, you know, the middle of the 27 Yankees order. But he has looked better. And I think with Romano, for as awful as it looked in April, it did seem like he was pretty sure that there was something wrong. There was something mechanical wrong. He was very open. Like, I don't have the velocity that I was looking for. And now it's starting to look like the good version of Jordan Romano. Now, that is still a flawed pitcher in terms of the command. And, I mean, I don't need to tell you guys. It's not like he was going out there and giving you that many 1-2-3 innings along the way. You know, there were some bumpy rides. But, you know, that's a lot of closers in 2025. So I don't think that necessarily makes him that different. But that said, I think now it really highlights his importance, right? With Alvarado out, not just now. I mean, not just as they try to, you know, stay in the NL East race, but I mean, if he's not available for October, which he's now not, I still expect them to probably add. We talked on the podcast we recorded this morning about some of the moves that they could make, moving some of their starters to the bullpen. But Romano was an investment. That was a real belief in him that last year was the blip, and that, you know, his track record of being a late inning guy could hold up in Philadelphia. And it was about as bad of a first impression as you could make, and one that I think is going to still take more for him to shake. But that's just relievers, man. Like, look at Jeff Hoffman. I mean, he basically is doing the opposite. So, you know, you're seeing where you're completely invincible in April, and then suddenly you give up a bunch of runs. It's going to go back and forth. That's usually how it works with these relievers.
Yeah, you become invincible, as it were. 8 consecutive scoreless outings for Jordan Romano, by the way, 11 strikeouts over those 8 appearances. You mentioned maybe they move a starter to the bullpen. Aaron Nola goes down. The presumption was that Taiwan Walker was going to come out of the bullpen and fill that rotation spot. And then Mick Abel throws 6 shutout yesterday with 9 strikeouts. I know the Pirates caveat applies to that one, but how do you kind of contextualize what Abel was able to do there? Because pretty solid season at AAA so far as well. Like you said, they might need an extra arm in the bullpen. Do you think they end up maybe tweaking this and giving him another start to keep Walker in the bullpen?
It sounds like Abel will go back down for now, but at some point they might be making those decisions. I mean, let alone Andrew Painter, right? We've been so focused on their top prospect, Andrew Painter, who's been working his way back from surgery and, you know, hasn't pitched in 2 years, and he's looked really good in AAA. We know we'll see him at some point. And Abel, who had been the Phillies' top pitching prospect before Painter really burst on the scene a couple years ago, he had kind of fallen off, and then this year really got back on track. And so these are good problems to have. I imagine, you know, they have other guys like Ranger Suarez, who also has experience in the bullpen. So you could see him maybe making that transition. I am curious for Painter in particular, is that someone you really want to mess with his routine as he's coming back from surgery? On one hand, you could say, oh, that's like actually a good way to monitor his workload, is to put him in the bullpen. On the other hand, is that someone that you want to then be putting in the bullpen and asking Andrew Painter to pitch multiple times a week coming off surgery? That seems a little sketchy. Does Abel fit in the bullpen, right? Is that someone that you could maybe throttle down and have in a high leverage relief role? We could see, like I said, there's a lot of options we could go there. Taiwan Walker has not been nearly as bad as he was last year. He's been more of a regular 4 or 5 starter than whatever last year was, which was one of the worst pitchers in baseball. So they have a lot of different options. But like I said, I also expect Dombrowski to make a move because that's kind of what he does.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. We obviously would like to see a little bit more of Abel after the first start went. Jordan, I want to stick to pitching. We spoke about Canadian Jordan Romano. I want to ask you about a different Canadian in Cal Quantrill, who, just as we all predicted, through the first immaculate inning of 2025 with Toronto native Liam Hicks catching probably the highlight of that rivalry series between the Tampa Bay Rays and the Miami Marlins.
Well, I can tell you that the Marlins and Rays were the series we spent the least amount of time on our podcast recorded this morning, where we do talk about every series from the weekend. And that got, I think, the fewest seconds of discussion.
But
hey, I'm glad you mentioned Cal Quantrill. I'm glad you mentioned Liam Hicks, Rule 5 pick who has been on fire recently. I am a big Liam Hicks fan. Yes, that is a real thing. I'm not just saying that because I'm on a Canadian radio show. I am a big fan of Liam Hicks, and I love that he has managed to be like a decent part of this Marlins team. And Cal Quantrill, who has not been super awesome to start his Marlins tenure, but, you know, immaculate inning. You can never take that away from him.
Yeah, shout out to Lawrence Park Collegiate Institute. That's Liam Hicks nice. Here in Toronto. That's a fun one. Before we let you go here, Jordan, there was also a lot of, I didn't get to see any of it, but based on you guys tweeting about it and things like that, it looked like it was quite the weekend in the NCAA softball tournament. It was the regionals. We're headed into the super regionals this coming week here. Jordy Ball, the standout two-way player, a lot of fun. What can you tell us kind of, you know, we've only got a couple minutes left here, but the weekend that was and what you're looking forward to about the super regionals.
So glad you're giving me this space to do this because I didn't get to talk about it on the pod this morning. What a weekend. And the cool thing about this weekend is that you really don't get a lot of upsets in softball. For as much as I love the sport and as much as it's awesome seeing Oklahoma just dominate everyone every year, and that might happen again, even though they're not the one seed, like usually the best teams win, especially on region. They usually take care of business. And we had all kinds of upsets, including the number one overall seed, Texas A&M, going down to Liberty, which just the two games yesterday were sensational. And yeah, Jordy Ball, if you are not familiar with Jordy Ball's game, who she's just going to carry Nebraska maybe all the way to the Women's College World Series, there are some superstars in the sport, and she is certainly at the top of the list right now.
Yeah, Jordy Ball, a two-way player, missed most of last year with ACL. Is it ACL injury
last
year?
Yeah, missed the whole first game she went down.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
And the 2 years before that wasn't really a two-way player. The two-way aspect of this is new for 2025.
Yeah, and Jordy Ball, who was this amazing prospect, and she transfers back to Nebraska because that's where she's from. And so she wins these two national championships with Oklahoma, but then she goes home to Nebraska now because, which one of the cool things about softball is that one player kind of can carry if you have the right one. That's not to disrespect the rest of the team, which is a solid club as well, but she is going to put them on her back and we'll see how far they can go.
That's awesome. That's
a
lot of fun.
Yeah, we'll definitely be on the lookout.
I spent my rehab, my ACL rehab, also becoming a dominant hitter in addition to being a pitcher is a great wrinkle. Jordan, thanks so much for doing this, man. Really appreciate you taking the time out.
Yeah, let's do it again soon. Appreciate it, guys.
Jordan Schusterman, Cespedes Family Barbecue, Yahoo Sports, the Barbiecast. Check out more on their podcast there. They go every Monday around the world of baseball. The one thing I guess we had another minute that I could have kept. Yeah. But
we've had some close calls recently, so I do understand.
Yes. So the one thing that was left in our notes is, regrettably, some good Sox stuff happening this weekend. I, of course, mean the Red Sox, not the White Sox. Nothing good will ever happen to the White Sox.
They know.
Rafael Devers with his first career walk-off. And more notably, because they lost yesterday. They got pumped yesterday a little bit. Brian Bayo wasn't very good. So the concession here, they really, really nailed it with the new Green Monster City Connect jersey.
They nailed it. You know, I tend not to wear any baseball gear or any MLB gear, that is.
I was going to say, don't call me out. I got my IBL Leafs hat on.
That's fine. But, you know, just this is the league that we cover. But that was one that I was like, I would like one of those. It is Green Monster inspired, and it's so nice. It's just an homage, really, to that ballpark. Is there anything about it specifically? The green is so nice, but what stood out to you?
Yeah, I mean, the font on it's good. It just, like, I don't know, it looks very cool. It's going to go so hard with the Wally, the helmet, the home run helmet as well. It's just cool. They did a really good job on it. A couple quick notes before we take a break here. Andres Jimenez was expected to run on the weekend. He had hit on the field on Thursday. He is now eligible to return. Unclear if he's going to need a rehab assignment or not. Max Scherzer is playing catch, has to build back up to live BPs before he goes out on a rehab again. Eric Swanson and Ryan Burr both pitched in AAA Buffalo games on Saturday. Both went more than an inning, so they are getting close. It would seem they haven't gone back-to-back days yet, but obviously going more than three outs is an important step.
Yeah.
Nick Sandlin playing catch from 120 feet. The hope is the mound today or tomorrow. Adam Klopfenstein is built back up and is now at AAA, by the way. So when you're looking at starting pitching depth, Leo Jimenez got bumped to Dunedin as he works his way back, rehabbing as well. And then a bunch of promotions on merit around the minors. Trey Savage, Gage Stanifer, and Cal Steven are going to join a very exciting Vancouver Canadiens team at High A ball after dominating for Single A Dunedin throughout the first kind of quarter of the season here. So that's a lot of fun going on. Oh, CJ Van Eyck got promoted to AAA as well, kind of a longtime prospect in the system. So yeah, some fun movement at the lower levels there. That's it for today. Thanks to Jordan Schusterman for joining us. Thanks to Nick Blackmore, Jake Scholes, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. No Blair and Barker today. It's all hockey talk. It's all digesting the Leafs loss. We will be back tomorrow to set up this Padres series. I hope you have a wonderful holiday Monday.